Welcome to 2,730 Years and Counting. The interviewer and the guest may not always share the same opinion, but we are all looking for the truth. Please join us.
The hand of Yahweh came upon me, and he took me far away to a valley filled with many bones. They were very, very dry. He said, "You must prophesy, O Son of Man. You must speak to the wind." So I prophesied as he commanded me. This is what I did say. Come, breath of Yah, come from the four winds. Breathe on these troubles, that they may come to life. I prophesied, and they came to life, and they stood to their feet. A mighty army, too big to number, so exceedingly great. And he explained to me, what is the mystery? This is the house of Israel. Though they say they are cut off, though they say they don't belong, though all their hope has been lost, forgotten who they are. I will raise them from the dead, bring them from the north and south to the land of Israel, and they will know.
Welcome to 2,730 Years and Counting. This podcast is about the two houses of Israel and the fact that they've been apart for a very, very long time. But the one that controls the universe, the one that created the universe, says that they must be reunited before the end of the age. And anybody who's been looking out the window lately knows that the end of the age is not far off. So we are going to have a talk today about some serious eschatology from one of my favorite eschatologists, a guy by the name of Steve Motria. And there aren't a whole lot of people that know more than he knows about it, in my opinion. And I think that you will be very, very interested in what he has to say. Now, understand, he just reminded me that this is not going to be a repeat of what the teaching he already put out. This is a discussion of that teaching. So we're going to be mostly doing questions and answers and sort of letting it go where it might. But the important thing for you to understand is that which we are talking about right now is Yah's plan for the end of the age. And it's just not far. It's coming right upon us. So please, if you think that this is entertaining, maybe you ought to wake up again and decide to take it a bit more seriously. Okay, with that being said, thank you, Steve, for joining me today. I know you're a busy man.
Thank you, Gene, for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it blows my mind. Here we are. We're only about 2 hours apart. You know, it's always been, you know, Steve, you're down there in Costa Rica and I'm all the way up here in Colorado. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But But that's all right. This is good. And one of these days soon, I'm going to have a car, and then we are going to get together and do something, in person.
In person,
I'd really
that'd
like
be
that.
Great.
I'd like that
well,
too.
That would be great because I mean, my room is not real big, but I can fit two people.
that'd be great. That'd be wonderful. That'd be great. And I saw you teach Shavuot, and just like anybody
That's
else, you're that much more impressive at Shavuot in person. Than not, so it's
well,
really
thank
great.
You. I appreciate that. Well, it was great having you there. It was a fun day.
Yeah, it was. Fortunately, it was a nice, sunny, warm day too, and a windy day, but that's all right.
That's
anyway,
right.
anyway, getting back to what I what we're getting started with here is you just got done delivering some teachings, not just this one either, some teachings that have to do with prophetic things that you see that are things that we need to understand so that we can properly respond, right? Because this last teaching was about the prayer of escape, right? And sorry, but the one who's doing the praying is not Yah. The one who's doing the praying is us.
That's
so,
right.
So we can't sit around and wait for somebody else to pray. We get to learn how to pray, and we get to learn when to pray, because that was another thing in your teaching that was very, very impressive, is the fact that you were telling us when to pray, because that's the crucial part of this, is timing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. So anyway, that I just I've listened to it twice now, and who knows, I may listen to it a third time. But anyway, I'll get out of your way and let you say some things here.
Well, the element of the prayer of escape, like I said, I think I said it in the teaching. It's everyone's trying to figure out what is the escape. Is it the time we flee, and or is it what many would call the pre-trib resurrection? Well, though I believe in what. Well, I don't believe. Okay, how do I say this? Because it gets confusing. I believe the resurrection happens at the beginning, near the beginning. And I think I tried to clarify that a little more in this teaching, that I think we all will rather go through or at least see the first five seals. And I think our prayer is to pray. We're removed from that. But before the resurrection even happens, you're going to have the first five seals in play. And with that, it's so important that we pray we escape it all.
Yes. In other words, we don't wait until Abba puts up a neon sign saying, okay, now's the time to pray.
And with that, because so many people today hold to the belief that Yeshua could come at any second, the rapture just boom, you're gone.
Yes. Right.
And I used to be there a long time ago. I get it, but that's not there, and I've tried showing so many people, look, Yeshua said, when the time comes that the 10 virgins, they flee out, there's a time, there's going to be something to wake us all up. And we've got to pray that, we know what that is.
That's
and
right.
I tell you, I've got multiple teachings out there on so many different various views. I get it, but if there's one thing that I am firm on today, anyway,
I understand.
is that we will see the Ark of the Covenant come out. And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Right.
And I really believe that will be the sign that, like, hey, it's getting serious. No. And then when you see that, meaning the Ark of the Covenant, set up
right
in the Tent of Meeting on the Temple Mount, that's the abomination that causes desolation, in my opinion.
Yes.
I know there's lots of different views, and I'm not saying that those other views are wrong. Maybe there's multiple ways they can be right together. I don't know.
Right. Well, and different perceptions too. The direction from which people are looking is going to change their perception.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Completely agree to that. And so, my biggest thing for me right now, I am on high alert of watching for the Ark to come out.
Yeah.
And, we got war going on over there, and we've got, there's war going on everywhere right now. And I was just watching some YouTube channels last night that I try to watch on economy stuff, and man, everyone is just screaming, dude, we're past the 2008. We're nearing the element of 1929 type stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. And even worse.
Yes.
And they're all saying it, but yet no one's paying attention. And I'm just going, am I the only one?
Yeah.
Or am I seeing stuff? Am I making something up in my own head? You know, type stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, I've seen that all over the place, not just with regard to religious considerations, but everything else too. I mean, everybody else is talking about, well, I won this argument, or I won this debate because I understand what it is. But then they don't say, and because I understand what it is, here's what we got to do right now.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't hear anybody saying action has to follow the words.
Right. Right. Well, I tell you what, when it comes to action, now many know that, you know, I'm a prepper to a degree, you know, and I work on it, but I, if there's anything that I believe more than anything is that your spiritual preparation should
That's
be
right.
at the utmost high, because you can lose your physical preparations
That's
in a
right.
heartbeat,
That's
but
right.
you know, you'll never lose what you have with him. And
yeah.
I think he will lead us and direct us. And,
yeah.
but, mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, we can't just, you know, what's the proverb? It says I can't even think of it now. Basically, the prudent man sees danger. That's it. The prudent see danger and takes refuge. The simple keep going and suffer for it.
Right.
And there's something to that. If you
yeah.
know there's something you just feel in your heart, or you just see it
yeah.
in the news or whatever, mm-hmm. if you can confess to yourself that you see something coming, then you have
yeah.
to acknowledge to yourself, what are you doing because
That's
of
right.
that? You know?
That's right. And, you know, I spent, I actually spent half the day yesterday at the Dogwood conference, in fact, I think you were there too, you know, maybe
I was
earlier
there in the morning.
Conference. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I was there and the Jewish guy was there speaking, and, you know, I wasn't able to stick around and midrash with him for about 8 hours, which I would have done. but he did say one thing that really struck me deeply, and I really believe it's true, and that is, now is the time to practice. It's
yeah.
I mean, it's if we're gonna, if prayer is what we're really concerned about here, why should we wait until the very last minute before we start to pray? But mm-hmm. rather we pray now consistently and earnestly, so that we know how to pray when the day comes.
Right.
And I just really believe that's a big deal. I'm sorry. I'm really interrupting you a lot.
No. I love it, because that's the way it should be. We should be praying, you know, and
yeah.
well, and that's the, like the prayer of escape, you know,
yes.
we should be praying that we are ready, that we are where we need to be
yes.
physically, spiritually, mentally, socially, whatever the case is, we need to be praying that we're where he wants us to be.
Right.
And
right.
I mentioned the previous teaching before this last one. And that one was called Before the Harvest. And I've heard so many times over and over in the years that, you know, the moon will turn blood before the harvest and stuff. This is in Joel, also in Isaiah 18. And that's what the teaching's on, Isaiah 18. And when it says this day, this word before, it's not in the sequence of timing before, but it's in placement of, like, I'm standing before my camera right now talking
right.
to you. That's
okay.
the before. It's not like 1, 2, 3, one comes before two.
Yeah.
You know, in sequence of timing. So when we read it, we think, oh, the moon turns blood, then this is going to happen over then later
yeah.
on in time. No, it says in the face of the moon turning blood, this is going to happen at the exact same time.
Gotcha.
And it changes the perspective of everything.
Oh, yeah.
And because we've been thinking, well, the moon's going to turn blood first, and then we'll see this happen. No, when you see the moon turning blood, dude, it's going down right now type
yes.
thing.
Yes.
And
wow.
It changes the perspective of everything. And it's only a 10-minute teaching. And yet I think it is so important for people to understand that element. But here's the thing. In the teaching, that one, I talk about how my current understanding and is how it talks about, you know, it's the harvest time. And it says before the harvest, this, this, and this. Well, if that's correct, it's talking about the grape harvest. Grape harvest is in the fall. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what you and I call the fall.
Right.
And there's so many things to this. It's like, I look at Revelation 6 and it says the whole moon will turn blood red at the sixth seal. Okay. It's Revelation mm-hmm. 6, the sixth seal. Well, on the first day of Sukkot, right in that time frame, you're going to have a full moon, because it's always the 15th day of the month.
Right.
And that is called the Feast of Ingathering. Okay. So the feast of ingathering, all the ingathering should be done at that time.
Right.
And this is what I think is so cool. I mean, there's so many things I think is so cool. Forgive me. But
well, that's all right.
In John chapter 6, multiple times, Yeshua says, on the last, I'll raise them up on the last day, talking about his followers and stuff, you, those who are faithful. Four or five times, he says, I'll raise them up on the last day. Then you go to chapter 11, he's talking to Mary and Martha regarding Lazarus, and she's talking to him. He's, you know, she goes, I know he'll be raised on the last day, this and the other. But again, the last day. And it wasn't until just like last week, it hit me. I'm going, because I have, up to this point, I've considered the last day, meaning the day of Shavuot, last day of Sukkot, okay? Several, right. Which is the last great day. There's several things that can be the last day.
Right.
But it never dawned on me until just this last week, after I made the teaching, is that the day before Sukkot, the 14th day of the month, that could easily be the last day just the same, because it's the last day of the harvest before the feast of ingathering.
Okay. I'm going, okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. It well, just never the symbolism, dawned on me.
Yeah. The symbolism is just right there, isn't it?
It all ties together so much. And I'm hoping to put a teaching out on this regarding this, but it's all there, you know? So there's so much for us to be considering this day and this time. Now, here's another thing I mentioned in this last teaching regarding the fifth day of the sixth month. That was in the prayer of escape, because that's found, given to us in Ezekiel. It's in chapter 8, and it's regarding the abomination that causes desolation, which, again, I believe will be what we see when, what causes Jerusalem to be surrounded this last time.
Right.
Now, if you go, and it says, this is in chapter 4 of Ezekiel, it says she'll be surrounded for 40 days. That siege takes place for 40 days. Mm-hmm. Well, if you go 40 days from the fifth day of the sixth month, you go 40 days forward, it takes you to the day before the 14th day of the seventh month. It's 40 wow. days. Yeah. Yeah. And all of a sudden I'm going, oh my. Now, I didn't say that in the teaching because I didn't want to, you know, be presumptuous, but I was like, there's some, we got to tie these pieces together, you know? And I was praying that people would do the connections themselves, but evidently you need to say it sometimes. so we're saying it now, you know, it's like there's now, am I saying that's it? No. Yeah. Am I saying this is the year? No. I am saying, though, that this is an option we need to be watching every year as this calendar keeps cycling through, because these are parallels. These are, you know, stuff that we just can't overlook. Am I making sense there?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, the thing about it, that the thing that's blowing my mind is as the end approaches, it seems to me that all the guys that are really, really watching prophecy closely, like you, are getting more strident. It's almost like wow, I see something coming. There's something on the horizon, and all these things are being revealed. You know, it's been my impression that the things that have been hidden are being revealed, and they're being revealed at a faster pace than they were in the past.
I agree.
And that, to me, that is as much an indication of the fact that the end is near than anything that we could possibly find otherwise. But what I see you doing is you're starting to see all these things that were symbols for the longest time and go, hold it a second. That could mean this, and that could mean this. And like I told you before we started this recording, you know, what struck me was how many two house references there are here. So many things that have to do with the 10 lost tribes and the two houses and how that deals into the end.
Yes.
It's just mind boggling.
In Ezekiel 4 alone, you see the two houses, because he says when you see Jerusalem being surrounded, this is a sign to who? Israel, the northern kingdom, you know? Right. And people, I don't know why, but maybe it's just because how we've been brought up. When we see the word Israel or the whole house of Israel, we think, you know, well, that's Israel, you know, and but it was Judah and Israel. Yeah, that's how it was separated, you know,
and we're still separated to this day.
That's yes. And that's why I even bring out in this last teaching. It's like when I see the 10 horns in Revelation and then the two horns in Revelation, both in Revelation 13. Well, he's speaking it. We can't forget the Bible is a Hebrew book.
That's right.
About the Hebrew people.
to the Hebrews. That's right.
Yes. And we can't forget, you know, it's like we're grafted in. Okay. We are not the new Israel. No, the Israel is still the same.
That's right.
And he has allowed us to be grafted in. Okay. So the content is still regarding Israel.
That's right.
And I had someone tell me, well, the ten horns or the BRICS nations now. And you already have so many BRICS nations already, and they keep adding them all the time.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. And we heard this regarding the United Nations back in the day and all the UN, the EU and all these. There's always going to be something to be a distraction. But keep the focus on it is a Hebrew written.
Right.
It's written by Hebrews for the Hebrews. Okay.
That's right. That's right.
And so we keep that in mind. It just shows us this is the reunification under the Antichrist trying to bring forth the two sticks coming together under the false Messiah, when Yeshua is going to be the one who really brings it together under him. You know,
that's right.
And in fact, if I can say it this way, if you look at Revelation chapter 7 and you see the 144,000 numbered, okay, they're numbered from each tribe. Okay. And then you see the massive people right after it, I think around verse 14, I can't remember the exact verse, where are standing on the throne. Well, let's think about this. That's Yeshua right then and there bringing the two houses together. All the tribes are now united under him.
That's
there. And then what do you see? Now you see the Antichrist doing the exact same thing in the land. And then what do you see the Battle of Armageddon is all about? It's about the 144,000 now going to claim the land. You know,
okay. Yeah,
it's all there. In fact, I mentioned this in the teaching. There's a two-part teaching, Satan's Greatest Masquerade. And I discussed on it how you see Yeshua has his bride at Mount Sinai. Now, this is my theory. Okay, I could be wrong here or there or whatever. I could be wrong on all of it, but you know what I'm saying. He has his bride to have there for one full year at Mount Sinai, just like he pulled them out of Egypt. They're there for 1 year. After that 1 year was done, you go to Book of Numbers. What's he telling them to do? Okay, guys, send the spies out. It's time to go to war. Our year is up. Okay. And the year up, it's out of Deuteronomy 24:5. If a man takes a bride, he has to be with her for one full year. No duty upon him and not to go to war. And so Yeshua can't go to war until that 1 year is up.
Right.
And so this is what you're going to see. My theory is he pulls his bride out, I think my current understanding is he takes them, and then the marriage covenant is made, and then he takes them down to Mount Sinai, and they spend that year there. Lots of, you know, you got lots of questions that can come from that, I know. But then you have the Antichrist surrounds them at Mount Sinai. And people say, well, it says Armageddon. Okay, that's got to be my ghetto. No, it's Har Moged, Mountain of Appointed Times, Moed.
Yes.
And so it's Har-Moed, Armoged. You know, in fact, I when I first made this teaching, I had multiple people coming to me and giving me the Hebrew for Moed and how it's got the sound.
Yeah.
And it's even though a gimel is not in it, it still presents that sound. So it's Moged when you say it officially, you know. And so Har-Moged. It's a Mountain of Appointed Times. It's Mount Sinai. And so they surround Yeshua. And then that's when, and in fact, I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over the board here.
No. This is great.
When you see, it says when he comes across Mount of Olives and he's got blood already on him. Well, where did blood come from? From the Battle of Armageddon back at Mount Sinai. And so that's where the blood happened. That's the first part of the battle. He goes up and then he crosses just the top part of the Dead Sea, which has them coming from the east, crossing over the Mount of Olives, entering in Jerusalem. And that's when he cleans house. He clears out the house. And it's like he's all these false sacrifices being done by the false priesthood and stuff. Nope, they're done. He wipes it all out. And this is the cool part. If you look in Revelation, it's Daniel chapter 9, and it talks about the 77s. Okay, 77s have been decreed for your people. This is like verse 1, 2, 3, 4, or 24, 25, right in that time frame of the book of chapter 9. And it says, these 77s are decreed for your people, all these different things. And it says, the last part, and to anoint the most holy. Okay. And for the longest of time, I've struggled going, well, what does that mean? Okay. I mentioned this in one of my teachings. It's the 70 weeks of Daniel and something else that's in that teaching. Well, that phrase, the most holy, is only mentioned one other time, and it's back in the book of Exodus. And it's talking about when they are to anoint the priesthood and the altar. It takes 7 days. And the altar is called the most holy. So I think, my personal opinion, that everyone says we're waiting for the 70th week of Daniel. Well, the 70th week of Daniel is literally 7 days. It's the week of Shavuot. Not Shavuot, but of
Sukkot.
Sukkot. Yes. Yeah, Sukkot. Sukkot.
Yeah.
So it all ends. I think the Battle of Armageddon will most likely take place at start on the time of atonement and conclude on the first day of Sukkot, those 5 days. And then you get the 7 days to taking us to the eighth day of Sukkot, when the altar is made most holy again to anoint the most holy. Then we can enter into eternity, and not eternity, but the millennium, with the priesthood established under Yeshua and the altar ready to go.
Wow.
Man, there's so much there. I get excited talking about it.
Yeah, that is so cool. That is so great. I mean, but so much of it is so symbolic, but when you recognize the symbols, you go, why didn't I see that before? But I really think that Abba, you know, pulls away the veils. I think that's what he's doing.
I believe that too.
Yeah. It's all been there. You know, it's always been before us.
Well, and that goes into how many times have we read a verse and we go, oh my gosh, I never saw that before, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's the same principle. It's like, as times are getting closer and closer in, he's going, hey, check this out. Hey, check that out. We're all going, oh my gosh.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. That's amazing.
It's amazing. It's so much fun.
Oh, wow. This is great. I have to occasionally get re-enthused, you know, and but this was my re-enthusing, man. I appreciate this a lot. And I appreciate your willingness to share it with me.
Absolutely.
You definitely, you know, you have your share of understanding that is just mind boggling. I'd never even thought about, you know, Harmageddon. Harmageddon. That's right. Harmageddon. Yeah. That's because that changes that whole thing completely.
Oh, completely.
You look in a whole different direction, and it's just mind boggling, you know.
I go into that in our teaching called Armageddon, or the something with Armageddon. Oh, the Parousia, Armageddon and the Parousia. That's what it was.
Right. Teaching. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. But, you know, I've been doing this for like 12 years now. And, you know, every once in a while, I just changed my bumper music for the first time in 12 years just to freshen everything up, you know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So here I am, and you just got done freshening up my understanding. It's great. I'm just sitting here just in complete haze because there's so much stuff there that you have to take into consideration. But now's the time for us to take it into consideration. Now's the time to get serious. And wow, you know, I almost want to make everybody else that I interview with, you know, watch this first. They have to watch this and then we'll talk. You know, but this is really great. This is really great. Well,
here's the thing too. I mean, those who follow us at all will know that I'm a firm endorser of the Copper Scroll Project. Jim Barfield out there has done a lot.
Yes.
I used to be on his team, and it shows he has evidence after evidence, this mound of evidence pointing to the Ark of the Covenant and the Tabernacle is all out there at Qumran.
That's right. Now, buried. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Just this week, I'm talking within the last 7 days, it started this last week, that Israel, you know, they've got everything going up on the northern border, then everything going on for the last year down in Gaza. Well, just this week, they started actually invading, and they called it, they call it from Israel, general said, we're at war, going into the West Bank. They started taking over the whole northern section of the West Bank.
Wow.
And I, when I heard this, I'm going, what are they doing this for? It's like, there's there's nothing there per se. And then they had their reasons. It caught everybody off guard. I mean, all the news agencies, all of them are going, where did this come from? Why are they doing this? And the second I saw it though, I'm going, oh my gosh, they're starting to take over the whole West Bank. Remember, Qumran is in the West Bank.
Right.
Okay. Now, granted, it's a little more, it's a little farther south than where they're at right now, but they've got to start somewhere, you know? And so I can see tensions happening here.
Yes.
Because my biggest question, even with talking with Jim, it's always been Jim Barfield at the Copper Scroll Project.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. We've often had conversations where it's like, you know, I said, Jim, I said, do you really think, you know, we're going to get there? You're going to be there and get to uncover. He goes, man, he goes, I hope so. And then I said, have you ever considered the thought that maybe a stray rocket or an earthquake or something like that opens up to where that way Yahweh says no man can get it, but, you know, I open it up.
Yeah.
And he goes, right. Oh, I've thought of that many a times. You know, yeah. I go, yeah, that's been a thought that's been crossing my mind. And yeah. We haven't talked, I guess last time I talked about 2 months ago, and I mentioned to him about, you know, things are heating up in the war and stuff. He goes, yes. Yeah. He said, it's getting there. And so right now, my current mindset is it only takes one stray rocket, you know, right. to open that right. cave up, and then boom,
right.
everyone sees yep. it.
So, and you know, the last discussion I had with him about that was he said, you know, I really have this thought occasionally that I might step into the presence of the ark and not be righteous.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, he said that has really helped my prayer life.
Right. Right.
You know, and yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how things play out. I do believe, well, like right now at the time of this recording, we're about a week away, you know, from the fifth day of the sixth month. So if nothing happens by then, my current thought is that we've got at least another year. You know, that's how my mind plays with this timing. You know, then you still got other timings to watch for and stuff.
Right.
And that's just how my mind is wired. And so I'm really watching this current week to see what happens over there. And it's the funny thing is, because on the calendar I follow anyway, there's lots of calendars out there. I get
right.
it.
Right.
The fifth day of the sixth month for us is on Sunday. Right. And as I thought about it, I'm going, oh my goodness. Because Yeshua said, pray that your flight doesn't take place in the winter or on the Sabbath.
Shabbat.
Now, right. Now the word for winter there is we apply that. And I've been digging more into that. It really means just as much bad weather. Okay.
Oh,
it's used, it's used for storms and bad weather just as much as it is for winter. And so it changes the perspective.
Yes.
And so let's read it this way. Pray your flight does not take place in bad weather or on the Sabbath. Now,
right.
Because it's so funny. We had some, well, it's not funny. Forgive me. We had some really bad storms come through our right. area a few months ago. And I mean, tornadoes were ripping houses up left and right.
Wow.
Trees were getting ripped in half. It's so crazy to see they're still left behind. I'm seeing them. But it was funny because when that storm was happening, we had to go to the center of our house and all this stuff was right. alarms are going off, our phones and everything. And we're in that inner room and I'm just with my family. I'm just thinking, I'm going, this is why it says, pray your flight doesn't take place in bad weather. Cause if it's bad weather like this, I'm stuck. I couldn't go anywhere, you know? And then the element of the Sabbath, well, if it's set up and established, you know, on the fifth day of the sixth month, like Ezekiel saw it. Mm-hmm. Does that mean it's getting set up on the day before, that being a Sabbath?
Right.
You know, and so if they see that on a Sabbath, well, that's their cue. Hey, he
right.
said it's going to be here on a Sabbath. We better got to dodge, you know, type thing.
Right.
So,
right.
Now that just plays right with it this year, of course. Who knows what's going to happen in the future years and this thing of cycles. But all the more, that's why I'm kind of watching this year with interest to see what happens, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really have to keep our eyes open because I'm with you. I mean, the things we're seeing are things which I think any serious observer would say are things that are not ordinary. I mean, we live in very extraordinary times.
Yeah.
And I think that now it's becoming obvious to me, and I'm not watching it nearly as closely as you are, but it's becoming obvious to me, even an observer or a chronicler, you know, I see Abba setting us up for what he's got coming next.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've seen enough supernatural things in the weather and in politics and everything else. Yeah. I've seen enough supernatural things happen that I know that Abba is starting to line things up, you know, and I've discovered that that's the way he does things. Because I've looked in my own life. I've looked back to the beginning of my life and I've realize that I see all these events that have happened in my life that when they were happening, they didn't appear to be in any kind of order, sort of accidental almost, you know, but of course there's no such thing as an accident.
Right.
You know that, but I mean, now they're lining up quite nicely. As I look back on my life now at the age of 74, I look at these things and I go, oh, that's why that happened. Oh, that's why that happened. You know, and I'm realizing, I mean, I'm doing now what he intended for me to do when I was born. But it took me until after the age of 50 before I figured out that this was what I was supposed to be doing. You know, I never dreamed. This was the furthest thing from my thoughts. But this has turned into my passion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something I will be doing, and I'll be doing it until Abba says stop. And I don't know if he's going to do that anytime soon.
Right.
You know, I don't know. But all I know is that's in my own life. And then I see you guys moving back from Costa Rica. You know, I see all these things happening. And it just looks to me like a very choreographed kind of thing that Abba is doing. Now, he doesn't reveal himself and say, oh, by the way, I'm doing all this. He just does it and expects us to be looking at his revelation and say, oh, and that's why I talk to you regularly, because I know you're seeing it, you know. Well, and go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was just going to say he orchestrates it all, you know, and it's like you said, it's up to us to be obedient and whether we see ourselves doing it or not. Now, but just as much as he tries to orchestrate in our own personal lives, he's orchestrating things globally just the same. Or I should say, he's allowing things be orchestrated, you know.
That's right.
And I wouldn't say necessarily that he's the one doing it, but he's allowing it to happen.
Right, right. That's
all
true.
All in his plan.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And
you know, he is. I mean, I really have my understanding of Yah over the last 10 years has really changed dramatically. Because, for instance, in Isaiah 45:7, where he says, I am Yah, I create evil.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He creates evil?
Right.
Yeah. And he uses evil to accomplish his purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to understand that.
Absolutely.
Go ahead,
no, it goes right in line with, we look at Pharaoh. Okay. We always say, well, God, you know, Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart. Yes, he did, but not at the beginning. Okay.
Right.
He allowed him to make his own choices. And then after he made his choice so many times, he goes, okay,
yeah,
you've made your decision. I'm going to keep these opportunities going to show my hand what I will do.
Right.
But you've made your decision, so I will harden your heart from here on out.
Right.
So he used him in the negative sense.
That's right. That's
and
right.
And that's scary. I don't want to be used in the negative sense. You know, I pray my heart is always open to him.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. You
know,
and that's
what's happening.
Yeah. Go ahead. I apologize. I'm really getting in the way, and I don't like that.
No, I know. It's all good.
You know, I heard back when I was in Denver, the leader of the congregation there gave a sermon one time about the Pharaoh's heart being hardened. And, you know, and his point was that he did it that way so that the Israelites would never forget that it was by him, by his outstretched, powerful arm, that they were removed from Egypt. They weren't.
Right.
You know, the Pharaoh didn't become a good guy. He didn't get pummeled into allowing them to go, but rather, you know, he did, but only for a moment. And then he was back at being a hard guy, bad guy again.
Mm-hmm.
But Abba wanted to make sure that we remembered who got us out of there.
Right.
And what better way to do it than to basically let the Pharaoh just get harder and harder and harder till he destroyed himself with his own hardness.
Right, right. You know, it's really cool when we look at the parallels we can find in the story of the Exodus out of Egypt. Because if you look at Moses and Aaron, okay, Yahweh speaking to Moses in front of the burning bush. Moses is fighting with Yahweh, says, I can't do this. And then Yahweh gets angry with him, okay? And which is, by the way, is the first time ever you see Yahweh's anger being mentioned. Okay,
right.
Which is, I have a whole separate teaching on that. But as he says, okay, well, fine, what about your brother Aaron? Okay, he's on his way now, he said, to meet you. So why was Aaron on his way? One. Two, how could Aaron be on? Why isn't he in slavery? Okay, he's a Hebrew.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this goes into the theory. Now, it's a theory a lot of people hold to, and to be straightforward with you, I lean to it very heavily, is that the tribe of Levi was never in bondage.
Oh.
It was only the other tribes who allowed themselves and agreed upon this bondage and by working. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, because then why again was Aaron free? Why was Aaron and Moses free to walk around and even appear before Pharaoh? Okay.
Yeah. And
because they're Hebrews. Hey, you're slaves.
Yeah. Why didn't the Pharaoh just say, get back to work and get out of my sight and stop bothering?
Right, exactly. But the point is, there's reason to believe that the tribe of Levi was never in slavery.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Now, this is the point I want to bring out with this, is that in the end times, we're not in slavery right now. People have, but there's coming a time that if you're left, if I can say, or not in the place of escape, you will be placed under slavery. Mm-hmm. And this is the separation. So you're going to see Yahweh, those who are awake and for the prayer of escape, they escape in time. They will be equal to, or likened, if I can say, unto the tribe of Levi. They're not going to be in bondage. Okay.
Okay.
And then now think about it. Where does the priesthood come from? Tribe of Levi.
Yeah.
Okay. So where is the future priesthood going to become from? This right here, not so much the future priesthood, but I should say more so the shepherds. Okay, he's going to have over the millennium time frame.
Right,
it's going to come from the 144,000 who are first separated and not ever put in bondage.
Right,
there's so many parallels. And then what was the first place that Yahweh took the people of Israel when they left Egypt? What was the name of the place?
Sukkot. Sukkot.
Sukkot.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's like it's all pointing to Sukkot time frame for the second year time around.
Yeah.
There's so much that can be there. And if we just start digging, oh my goodness, we'll see it all,
Wow. Wow. And as we've said before, it's all being revealed. He's just removing all the hiding and all the covering so that we see more and more. And then we have less and less excuse to avoid it, to ignore it. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm sure he's looking at us and going, can't you see? Come on, what do you need? What do I have to write you a story and hand it to you? You need another Torah?
Right. Right.
Wow, that's wild. I agree with you completely. And I think that we've got to start taking him seriously and start doing what he wants us to do.
Amen.
That's all there is to it. And
amen.
I just want to thank you for today. It was a wonderful, wonderful time, and I know you're busy, so this is your time that you gave to me, and I thank you very much for that, brother.
I thank you for the opportunity, brother. I hope and pray it can help a lot of people.
Oh yeah, and we'll stick it out there in front of them where they have even less excuse.
Amen.
It'll be right there. And as I always say, at the end of every one of these, I've always got four words I say to everybody, because they always apply, and they apply here as well, and that is, remember who you are.
Yahweh, your Elohim, and I am